Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You're listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and we've got all sorts to get our teeth into this evening. Cutting through the noise of the rumour mill, letting you know who your club could really sign. And we're starting with Manchester United. We're going to be talking to Dominic Booth of the Manchester Evening News. And the big name is the name of a big man. Harry Maguire, aka Slabhead, has been linked with the Red Devils for quite some time. And he's been linked with them for a fairly hefty fee, £80 million for the Leicester centre half. And you wonder, there's lots of people looking at this deal and saying, you know what, Maguire, good centre half. You remember that header against Sweden? Yeah, good header against Sweden. Good player for England. Is he a Rolls Royce of a player? Is he the kind of centre half? Is he a Sergio Ramos? Where you look at him and you say, you know what, they're not scoring any goals. He's going to terrify those forwards, both in terms of trying to get past him and because he might hurt them. He's mobile and he can play out from the back. If we're honest, Harry Maguire is not that kind of player. He's not a Virgil van Dijk. He's not the kind of centre-back who's going to come into a team and transform everything. Manchester United with Harry Maguire, and it is now looking like it is going to be Manchester United with Harry Maguire, and not going to suddenly be a new beast. But when we're talking about this £80 million fee, the words that keep getting thrown around are worth and value. Is he worth £80 million? Is he value for money? That's not the question. It's just not the question. We've got to move away from this idea of value, partly on the most basic level, as you all know if you listen to this show every week, because the transfer market has changed. 10 or so years ago, £30 million for Andrei Shevchenko. You were wincing £50 million for Fernando Torres, the most dangerous striker in England. We were all going, how much? £50 million for Torres. £50 million buys you me at this point, right? So £80 million isn't as huge as it sounds. But also, it's not just about value. It's not just the fact that he's an England international. He counts as homegrown. He ticks those boxes for continental qualification. It's not about value. It's about necessity. Manchester United's defence is a shambles. It's not for want of trying. It's not for want of expenditure. Look at their centre-halves. Phil Jones, expensive. Brought in as a youngster. Alex Ferguson, when he signed Phil Jones for roughly £18 million as a teenager from Blackburn Rovers, said he was going to be the best player who had ever played for Manchester United. No, forget about Cantona, forget about Giggs. We've got Phil Jones. Didn't work all that well. Rumour has it he even turned down the chance to sign World Cup winner and Real Madrid defender Rafael Varane to bring Jones into the club. Chris Smalling, he's not good enough either. Eric Bailly, over £30 million from Villarreal, came with a serious, serious pedigree, by the way. He's been hopeless. So, United aren't in a position now where they're thinking about value. They're not thinking about worth. They're not, frankly, thinking about the money at all, because the writing is on the wall. The situation is very, very simple. Their defence is terrible. Terrible. It's not the back four of a top four club. As a result, they have to sign a centre-half, they have to sign one now, and he has to be of sufficient quality to sort that back four out, to marshal it. I'm not saying sort the whole team out, but marshal that defence right now. So we can talk about wonder kid names, we can talk about Matthijs de Ligt, we can talk about William Saliba from Saint-Étienne. This isn't the game that United are playing. They can't sign a 19-year-old and go, well, he'll be world-class in 2022. They'll have been relegated by then. They need to sign a defender who can do it now. So let's look at the Premier League, because if you sign someone from abroad, however good they are, there's always that risk that it's going to take them a while to adjust. We were just on the Arsenal fan show a moment ago. Let's look at Arsenal. Thierry Henry, took him quite a while to get going. Robert Pires virtually did nothing for the first 3 months in a red shirt. If you buy a big name, if you bought even a Kalidou Koulibaly, say, who they've been linked to from Napoli, there's always that worry. Not played in England. Can he do it? Can he do it? As the old cliche goes, on a cold, windy night in Stoke. As such, United aren't messing around here because they can't afford to. They need a Premier League proven centre-back. And who's better? Who's better than Harry Maguire in the Premier League? There are a few. Aymeric Laporte, Toby Alderweireld, Jan Vertonghen and Virgil van Dijk. Are there any others? Not really. Could they sign any of those four? Well, possibly Alderweireld. He's got a £25 million release clause, but he's not homegrown. He's getting on a bit. City won't sell to United. Liverpool won't sell to anyone. Harry Maguire is the best Premier League centre-back United can conceivably buy. And as a result, it becomes very simple. It's not about value. It's not about worth. It's about getting the right man. It's about getting the only man. I'm going to put this in context for you. Imagine you've got a new partner and you've gone round his or her parents' house, your future parents-in-law, for dinner for the first ever time. And, you know, it's a bit of an early wobble, a bit of awkward handshakes. You get it wrong with the stepdad early on. You make a joke that doesn't quite hit. And you think, well, it's starting to settle down. I'm doing a bit better, but I really need the loo. It's not a problem. This is a normal thing, but I've just got to go to the loo or it could be a bit of an issue. So you wander upstairs, you go to the toilet, and there's a bloke standing in front of the door. And he says, right, you can use this toilet, but it's going to cost you 200 quid. 200 quid to use the toilet? What are you talking about? I can just use the toilet. And he's saying, no, well, I'm sorry, mate. You can't come in. 200 quid or nothing. You've got two options there. 200 quid, ridiculous, ridiculous price to go to the toilet. Do you pay the 200 quid or do you not get to use the toilet in front of your future parents-in-law? This is the situation that Manchester United are in. They can pay the 80 million or they can not have the centre half and they can have a leaky defence for another season. It's not about what he's worth. It's about getting him in. The conversation in value continues with Leicester's potential replacement. They're already thinking about life after Maguire and they're looking at Lewis Dunk of Brighton. Lewis Dunk, a fairly good player. 6 out of 10 centre-half. Bit of a goal threat off set plays. Solid at the back. Likes a headed clearance. Old-fashioned. No nonsense. Not that mobile. But he's a big lad. What do you reckon? 10 million? No. 45. Again, mad number. Is Lewis Dunk, in inverted commas, worth 45 million English pounds? Not a prayer. But in the absence of Harry Maguire, do Leicester need a centre-back? Yes. Do they need a Premier League centre-back? Yes. Do they need that centre-back to be homegrown? Yes. Does he have to be a realistic target? Yes. How long is the list? It's not that long, and Lewis Dunk is at the top of it. We need to stop thinking in terms of FIFA, in terms of Football Manager. You can't just sort by best player, bid the money that he's worth and get him. There's no way of knowing he'll work. There's no way of knowing he'll come. And it needs to stick now. If you can get a centre-half in, if you know he's going to be heading crosses out from day one, just pay the money. We'll also be zooming over to the other half of Manchester. Can a squad that's too good be a blessing and a curse? Because most managers would obviously kill for a squad like Pep Guardiola's. Oh, Raheem Sterling's injured. All right, I'll play Riyad Mahrez, who's looking like single-handedly winning Algeria at the African Cup of Nations. Sounds lovely, but when you've got a squad that's that studded with world-class talent, how do you keep everyone happy? How do you do it? Because you've got 11 places on the pitch, they can't all play, and they're all good enough to walk into almost any other starting 11 in world football. We're hearing links with Leroy Sané to Bayern Munich. Pep's got two options. Let one of the brightest talents of European football walk, or start playing him a bit more. A tough one to balance, all that and more coming up, but we're going to have to kick it off with Maguire and United in just a moment.
This is Love Sport.
The transfer rumour mill here on Love Sport Radio. And we're talking Manchester United, we're talking Liverpool, and we're talking Love Island. Because the message is clear. Never go back. Never go back in love. And X is a reason. Should Amber go back to Michael? Obviously not. They had their chance. It didn't work out. He left her for another woman. I'm joined on the line by Daniel Moxon, who's editor of The Copite, an expert on all things Liverpool. Good evening, Daniel. Felipe Coutinho left you for another woman. Should you take him back?
Short answer is no. It's not necessarily for the fact that he left, even though he did leave in sort of quite shady circumstances. There were a lot of clouds over his exit. But at the end of the day, he was talking about Barcelona was his dream. Barcelona came calling, and can you really blame him for that? But on the other hand, you've got to sort of look at it and go, do Liverpool really need Coutinho right now? I would say, yes, he's a terrific player, and he would certainly improve the squad. But would he necessarily get into the first team? That's something that you've got to question as well. And obviously, he's going to cost a lot of money. And you've got to sort of weigh up whether you think that that sort of expenditure would be worth it for his stature within the team. And I don't think it would be.
You know what, Daniel? I think you're absolutely spot on. Because as you say, you'd be looking at, what, the best part of 100 million, more than 100 million to bring him back if you brought him back on a permanent. What if I told you that Calcio Mercato in Italy are reporting that Coutinho's given his approval to a deal which would see him join Liverpool for 2 years on loan, giving Liverpool an option, but not a compulsory option, an option to buy him for 88 million at the end of it. If you were getting him just for his wages, does that become a rather different question?
It would, of course, if you were just sort of getting him for his wages. But there's reasons why that it just doesn't add up. For starters, he's 27 years old. He's sort of entering his prime years right now. Why would Barcelona want to ship out someone that's entering the prime of their career without getting any... The only financial benefit out of it, they would be getting his wages off the wage bill, but they wouldn't be getting any money off the end of it. And Liverpool, he'll be 29 by the end of this so-called two-year loan deal.
So you wouldn't pay the
money? Would they really want to spend 88 million on a 29-year-old?
Well, listen, Daniel, it sounds like the perfect move for you. Take him for the 2 years, forget about the resale value, then just hand him back to Barcelona and go, thank you very much, try selling him now.
Oh, absolutely. It would be perfect if Liverpool had that opportunity. But it's for this reason that I just don't think that Barcelona would ever even entertain that scenario.
So you don't think this one's happening?
I'm not buying it.
Okay, well, one that could be a bit more believable is Mignolet. He's a man who's not played so little football that I frankly forgot he existed, let alone that he still had a contract at Liverpool. He's never going to get a look in before Alisson, but we're hearing reports in the Mirror today that he could actually stay at the club despite wanting first-team football. Are you expecting him to warm the bench for another year?
I am, and it's because he, all right, yes, he'll obviously, any player would want to be playing first team football, but at the same time, he has a good thing at Liverpool. He's obviously getting some good wages, but more than that, he feels like he's part of something bigger. And strangely enough, I was actually speaking to John Atterberg last week, who was Liverpool's goalkeeping coach, and we were talking about Mignolet a little bit, and he was telling me just how important he is in the training field. He spends a lot of time with the younger goalkeepers, helping to coach them. And he's really, really important to the club in that capacity. So it's no surprise at all that the club wants to keep him around. As you say, it's a question of whether or not Mignolet wants to stay. I personally don't see him moving unless a really, really good offer comes along.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But he's a professional footballer. At least the hope from a fan's perspective is that he wants to play. Where do you think he could go and get in the team?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, he's still a very good goalkeeper, and you would want to play at a top level, probably Champions League football. Thinking off the top of my head, I'm not sure there are many sort of Champions League sides that are really looking for a goalkeeper right now, although Porto could be a good destination. Obviously, Iker Casillas is recovering from his cardiac arrest that he had not so long ago, so maybe there's a look in there. I'm not sure if I've heard if they've signed a replacement goalkeeper. If I haven't, it's going to sound ridiculous. But possibly that might be an option. There would be options for him, but as you say, it's got to be the right deal to come along, and Liverpool have to be willing to let him go.
And Daniel, we got one of my favourite kinds of transfer rumour breaking in the press today, which is a kind that actually doesn't come along very often, where a player who I've literally never heard of is suddenly being linked with every top club in England, and I have to go, hang on a minute, who's he? Where's he come from? Does this name ring a bell? Fedor Shalov, 21-year-old striker for CSKA Moscow.
The name sort of rings a bell. I must admit, I don't know a massive amount about him.
Honestly, mate, I have got no idea where he's coming from, but I've done a bit of digging. He'd cost 20-odd million, and he had a good year last year. It was a breakthrough in the Russian league for him. Scored 15 goals, which was more than anybody else, long after, of course, the heyday of Obafemi Martins. But he got 7 assists as well. And if you watch him play, and the thing that lots of people are saying about him is this is a guy who doesn't just score goals. He's got very, very high footballing intelligence. And a young lad for 20 mil, well, decent piece of business. But do Liverpool need a striker?
Well, when you put all that together, I mean, you look at his goals, you look at his assists, his work rate. On paper, he's young. It seems like it would be a good investment.
But does he get any football?
But that's the other side of it. Divock Origi's just been given a new contract. He's the Champions League hero. He's second in command.
Imagine if they didn't give him a new contract. Cheers for the Champions League with Divock on your way.
Exactly, yeah. That was always going to happen. I mean, he only had 12 months left, so the club had to move very quickly to get under that. But that's a brilliant piece of business from their side of things. Then you've got young Rian Brewster as well, who's having a terrific pre-season so far. Two 45 minutes. So one game overall, 3 goals in pre-season so far.
2 were against Tranmere, though. Let's not mess about.
Of course. He's not playing against the top teams, but at the same time, it is very promising that he's leading the line in this capacity. And his overall play as well, especially against Bradford, he was constantly harrying, pressing from the front. He was almost playing a Bobby Firmino sort of role. And don't get me wrong, I'm not comparing him to Firmino. All I'm saying is it looks like that he's been sort of cultivated for possibly in the long term to be his successor in the way that he plays.
And also, for you as a staunch Liverpool fan, there's got to be an element of Rian Brewster as a young lad coming through that academy. You want another Gerrard, you want another Owen, surely?
Absolutely. I mean, we've got young Trent Alexander-Arnold, of course, at right back, who's emerged into arguably one of the best in his position in the world. And we want to see more of that. The fans want to see more Scousers representing the club. Until Trent came along, we haven't had one since Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher left the club. So we've got that with Trent, and we want to see more youngsters coming through. I know that Brewster isn't a Scouser, but at the same time, he is someone that's been developed by the club, and there's a lot of other young, promising players in the academy as well. And it's exciting being able to see them all thrive and play in pre-season, and we can get a good look at who might be the stars of the future.
Are you expecting Brewster to feature in the Premier League this year? Are we going to see him on the bench at least?
That is the general feeling, yes. Klopp has said on a couple of occasions that he will get chances this season. Maybe not straight from the beginning, although at the same time, you've got to look at there's been international competitions this summer. Sadio Mane is probably in the final of the African Cup of Nations with Senegal, so he probably won't be back for the start of the season. Mo Salah's Egypt went out early, so he could be back in time, but at the same time, if he's not, you've got of the front three there, you've got two people that might not be available for the opening day. You've got to look at Origi, he's probably going to fill one. Would Brewster fill the other one to start off with against Norwich?
Yeah, no, it's exciting times in terms of young talent at Liverpool. Another one is, of course, Herbie Kane, who improved on loan at Doncaster last season, despite being named after a famous cinematic car. We're hearing he's set to go out on another loan. We're looking at the Championship this time round, and there are London links from a Love Sport perspective. Possible move to Brentford, possibly Charlton Athletic, or if he decides that Hull is a more appealing destination, he could always go there. What could a club expect from him?
Well, first of all, I think he would prefer you to refer him to, he sounds like Harry Kane more than Herbie the car.
No, I'm going for the car, mate. I'm really sorry.
Okay. But look, a move to the Championship, I mean, that shows progression on his part. He had a good season with Doncaster. And then moving up to the Championship with any of those clubs, it would be a step up for him. And it would be good to see if he can work at that sort of level. But he's proven himself in League One. I think he deserves a shot in the Championship, and I think if they can get a loan deal with decent terms, I think any of those clubs would benefit from having him around.
Absolutely. And talking of Liverpool loan stars, just finally, enlighten me about Harry Wilson, because I think he's a fantastic player, class on loan last season at Derby. Now in this weird sort of hinterland where 25 million for a permanent move sounds like a lot of money. He's good enough to play Premier League football, not good enough to do so for Liverpool. What's going to happen to him?
That's the big concern at the moment, really, because yes, he did look very good on loan at Derby, but There's a lot of sort of thinking, well, obviously, a lot of his high-profile moments came from, especially set pieces, obviously the one against Manchester United that got him a lot of attention.
I believe the technical term there is filther.
Yeah, this is it. He's clearly a very talented young player. Well, we say young, he's 22 now. When you start looking at 22-year-olds, you can't, as they're getting on a year older, you can't keep calling them young talents. Jesse Lingard keeps getting called a young talent. He's 26.
Yeah, I'm 23 and I finally realised that the dream is over. Up until this exactly. point, I've gone, you know what? I could be a Vardy, a late bloomer. I'll be there scoring in 14 consecutive fixtures. Is there any hope for Wilson? Because I think your point about his age is a very, very good one, and the age of these players generally. 22 isn't old, but it's old enough to know you're not going to become a really world-class player unless something extraordinary happens. So are Liverpool going to look to cash in now?
I mean, there is hope for him, for sure. As I say, he's clearly a very talented player, but at the same time, Michael Edwards has a very good transfer head, Liverpool sporting director. He'll be looking at that situation and goes, is this the highest that his value will be? Will another loan raise that value, or if he flops, will it drop down? If we cash in now, is this going to be sort of the most we will get for him? I'm looking at Wilson's progression. I'm looking at Ryan Kent, who's been playing on the opposite flank to him in pre-season, who's, to be honest, he's outshone him so far.
Was he the lad on loan at Rangers?
Yeah, he was on loan at Rangers last season. He won the Player of the Year. He got voted.
That's what happens if you punch a Celtic player, by the way, which is what he did. Instant Player of the Year, regardless of what you do on the pitch. You hit Scott Brown, apparently Player of the Year.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'd like to think that there was a little bit of sort of, you know, good performance and ability thrown in there. Although, you're probably right. A punch to the face on one of your rivals' players is certainly going to endear you to your fans.
In terms of Wilson, then, that point again about a loan, does it up the value? Does it bring it down? I mean, what about a loan to a Premier League new boy? He goes to Villa, he goes to Sheffield United. If he scores 10 goals there, you're looking at 40 mil, aren't you?
Absolutely. But the if is the big one in that. And a loan to a lower league, sort of a bottom half Premier League club, maybe newly promoted side, looks like the right sort of progression on paper from playing in the Championship. But at the same time, those teams aren't going to get much of the ball. They're not going to get many opportunities in front of goal. And that's probably going to restrict his chances, which means he'll get less of an end product. And some might then just look at that on the face of it and go, well, he's struggling to get opportunities. He's not playing well. And that may not necessarily be the case, but I feel like he'd need to be playing in a side that's going to be dominating games and where he's going to see a lot of the ball, because when he's got the ball at his feet, that's when he makes things happen. So if it were to be a loan, I think from purely the point of view of raising his value, I think top end of the Championship may be more beneficial.
No, I think that sounds like the right move to me. Daniel, enlightening as ever. Thank you so much for your time. Daniel Moxon, the editor of The Kopite, giving us the inside line on all things Liverpool. Coutinho, well, on a permanent, no thank you, but on loan, quite a good piece of business. Herbie Kane, not Harry Kane, could be a shrewd bit of business for Brentford. Mignolet is still going to warm the bench. No one has any idea who Fedor Shalov is at all. And could we see Harry Wilson off to Aston Villa? But I just want to talk United for a moment. We've done Harry Maguire. They're going to spend 80 million on paper. It's too much money, but it's what they have to pay. For all my ranting about value, Sean Longstaff for 50 million quid. Sean, I'm all right in midfield for Newcastle Longstaff. Sean, I'm the new Jonjo Shelvey Longstaff. 50 million English pounds. No, they've looked at a central midfielder and gone, well, he's quite tall and scored twice against Burnley. Where are you picking these figures from? 50 million quid. This is not the same thing as Maguire. I'm not contradicting myself here. They don't need a central midfielder as desperately as they need a centre-back. There is nothing forcing their hand to make that move. They've got Scott McTominay, who already, if they want an average holding midfielder, McTominay is already there to do that job. I cannot see where that deal is coming from. But a more interesting one is Romelu Lukaku to Inter Milan. It's been talked about for a while, and we're hearing reports in both the English and the Italian press today. And remember, when both countries are talking about it, it normally means there's a little more truth to it. We're hearing he is going to go to Inter for 60 million next week. And now there's a question. Because we know that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer loves Marcus Rashford. I love Marcus Rashford. He's a cracking player. Quick, strong, dynamic, young, and of course, crucially, English. He's probably good at cricket as well, by the way. He's going to be the main man. But who's second choice? There are two options. Do United go and sign someone? Do they look at perhaps a Fedor Shalov? They bring in a young player, have him on the bench, introduce him slowly, see what he's got. Or do they, like Liverpool with Rhian Brewster, look to the academy, look to 17-year-old Mason Greenwood, who we know Solskjaer likes. He got off the bench against PSG and a couple of Premier League games last season. He's so highly rated at United. I cannot express the extent to which they rate this kid. What about one young English striker with another young English striker for an understudy? They'd almost be like Manchester United again.
This is Love Sport.
The transfer rumour mill here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and we're flying off to Manchester once again to the blue half. This time, Liam and Noel would be delighted, and I'm delighted too, because I'm joined on the line by the expert that is Jack Ranson of BBC Manchester. Good evening, Jack. Lovely to have you on the line. First of all, Leroy Sané, he's not leaving, is he?
I can't see it. Yeah, personally, I can't see it. I think, certainly in recent years, Manchester City, and, well, particularly since Pep Guardiola's been there, they've done a pretty good job of, you know, keeping hold of players that they want to keep hold of and really keeping, you know, even someone like Sané happy. Yeah, and, you know, he clearly wants to play more. I'm pretty convinced that Pep Guardiola will have told him, you know, that he will figure more heavily, and I think they'll certainly want to keep him, and that's all the sounds are coming out of the club, sort of in the official channels. So I think if they want to keep him, they will keep him, certainly from where I'm standing, that would be the best move.
The rumour is that Sané's linked with Bayern Munich. That's in the Mirror today. We're hearing that he might actually snub Bayern if they do make that move. But in order to keep him happy, in order to get him to stay, is it going to be a case not just of giving him more football, but giving him most of the football? Are we going to be looking at a starting front three of Sané, Aguero and Sterling?
I don't think that's necessarily a bad option. You know, he's always impressed me, to be honest, Leroy Sané. I know he has sort of come under fire sometimes for his end product, and sometimes, you know, obviously he's incredibly athletic, he's got a lot of pace, but that final ball sometimes is a bit lacking. So I can kind of understand that, but City don't got that in other areas. You know, Sterling, Aguero, they're the real sort of goal scorers, aren't they? They're the heart of that, that attack. So what Sané gives them is some real pace and incision, and particularly when they're playing against teams that sort of sit deep and defend and get men behind the ball. I think, you know, he's a really good option, and obviously they've got so many top players, you know, Riyad Mahrez as well, who presumably will want more game time. So he obviously Guardiola's got to balance that. But as I say, I think that is one of his massive strengths as a manager. And I think he will be able to do that, and he will be able to keep them all happy.
Do you really think he can juggle it, though? Because this City squad is so deep that when I was doing my reading for tonight's show, I was looking for all the City transfer rumours. You got two or three potential arrivals and what feels like 47 exits. This is a squad that is almost too strong for its own good. How can everyone be happy? Because Riyad Mahrez is their record signing. He didn't feature very much last season. He cannot give both Mahrez and Sané a properly key role in that team. And there's young talent coming through as well. Phil Foden increasingly is going to want a chance. There's going to come a time where something has to give and someone has to step aside, isn't there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose at some point, you know, perhaps, and it would only take one person to for that to happen, wouldn't it? You know, one sort of bad egg is the cliche. But I actually really do believe that what Pep Guardiola has achieved is a perfect combination of competition for places, but also having the right people, having enough depth to cover himself, but obviously not having sort of too many players so that they're unhappy. I think the mood, and obviously, you know, it's from the outside for me, the mood always seems to be everyone's hungry, everyone wants to play, but they're not sulking if they're not playing. They are just hungry to get on that pitch. And I think that's the exact sort of frame of mind that you want your players to be in.
A frightening proposition for any of their rivals in the Premier League, you'd have to say. One man who's hungry to get back on the pitch as soon as possible is Dani Alves. He's 36, he's Brazilian, he's just left PSG, available on a free. And City are up there with Tottenham and Arsenal in being linked with a potential move for the man who invented the modern wing-back. Could you see this happening?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, on one sense, obviously it makes sense. Having you know, worked with Pep Guardiola at Barcelona, and obviously having sort of most of his success there, Dani Alves.
Do you think that would make City favourites if they do want him?
Perhaps, you know, and I mean, I can only see that as being a positive for Dani Alves, because, you know, like I say, most of it, you know, the best part of his career was spent at Barcelona, and, you know, the best of those years were with Pep Guardiola as manager. So, yeah, I mean, I can see the appeal of that. My one reservation with it would be, I mean, I suppose I can see it because, you know, City are really yet to replace Vincent Kompany. I know they've got a few players who sort of have that leadership quality, have those leadership qualities, but really yet to replace the figurehead that was Vincent Kompany. And Dani Alves, you know, clearly really experienced player, not quite a leader in the same way that Vincent Kompany was, but he brings that experience. And with him being Brazilian, you know, there's quite a few Brazilian players in the City squad. It might help them, someone like Gabriel Jesus, who's again one of those players who is sort of a fringe player, but yeah, he's a Brazilian international, which is frightening. So yeah, I can see how it would make sense. I can see the appeal certainly for Dani Alves, you know, to leave, to still be playing at 35 and to be in with a decent shout of winning the Champions League. You know, it must be a good feeling. So yeah, I could see it happening. I think it probably is more whether City would go for it than whether it appeals to Dani Alves.
There are people on Twitter, which is a dangerous way to begin any sentence, but there are people on Twitter saying that if Dani Alves does go to City, he walks straight into that team and Kyle Walker sits on the bench. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I didn't see, you know, obviously I wasn't watching him play week in, week out.
He's got a lot in his locker. He was scoring screamers still. He was bombing up and down that wing. It's frightening.
Yeah, but he seems to, I mean, he seems to, certainly from, you know, from what I saw, he seems to maybe lack the consistency. So I'm not sure whether he would be a week in, week out starter for City. And I see Kyle Walker seems to get a lot of stick. I know, you know, maybe his quality has slightly dropped off, but I wouldn't say that, you know, Dani Alves would be the replacement for him and be first on the team sheet there. I think it would be a similar situation. You know, I think perhaps he would push Kyle Walker and compete for his position, but he wouldn't be week in, week out. And we know Pep Guardiola loves to rotate. He loves to change it up, make vast amounts of changes for different competitions and competing on all these fronts. So, yeah, I almost don't think you could say, he would pick one over the other. I think he would maybe keep sort of a 50-50 balance, if you like.
A classic bit of Guardiola rotation, perhaps. Yeah. As a final deal for us to talk about, Jack, the depth in this City squad is so strong that a highly rated Brazilian talent, who they signed just 2 years ago as a teenager in the form of Douglas Luiz, the holding midfielder, he's now 21, and we're hearing that the deal is basically done, to be honest, to let him go to Aston Villa for 15 million quid. That's according to the Birmingham Mail. Interesting side note, by the way, here. Douglas Luiz spent those 2 years, both of them, on loan at Girona, who are part-owned by Pep Guardiola's brother. Anyway. Nothing illegal
Curious.
About that. Nothing illegal about that, by the way. It's entirely above board and fair enough. But I find it fascinating, like Frank Lampard calling in the favours, the way family ties can be behind these things. But Douglas Luiz hasn't quite worked for him. Indeed, he didn't get a work permit last year, which Guardiola was pretty annoyed about, which suggested he wanted to play him. He now seems happy to let him go, but we're hearing that City want a buyback clause. They've activated one already this season. Do you think Guardiola's cutting his ties, or is he just going to let him get a bit of Premier League experience?
There have been, I think Pep Guardiola, knows how to play hardball in these situations. And I think he knows, that really players will good players and players who want to succeed will stay, or at least will go away, get the experience, and then come knocking again and come back and return to what he's building there. I think that's sort of his attitude towards it. So I think, clearly, as you say, with the whole work permit thing, Manchester City wanted him. And it sounds like they still want him. It sounds a bit of a strange one.
But if you still want him, do you sell him?
I think their attitude is, if a player wants to go, and clearly there has been some administrative problems with Douglas Luiz, with this whole work permit thing. And yet somehow Aston Villa seem pretty convinced that they can get a work permit for him. So that whole thing strikes me as a bit odd, but I don't know the ins and outs of it. But I think if the player wants to leave, I think their attitude is he has to be allowed to leave. And as I say, I think Pep Guardiola knows that if this guy is as good as people say he is, and as good as his potential would lead you to believe, then he will come back, he'll come back in the pursuit of trophies, and hopefully he'll come back as a better player, like you say, having had that Premier League experience.
Yeah, he'll come back magically transformed into Yaya Toure. Jack, lovely to speak to you as ever. Jack Ranson there of BBC Manchester, giving us the inside line on City's transfer dealings. I just want to talk about these buyback clauses for a minute, because in the good old days, the good old fashioned days, what you did was a loan deal. Now, some clubs take that a bit far. Chelsea have currently got 473 players out on loan. No, it was only, I think, 39 last season. It's still a farcical amount. If you believe in a footballer, as Jack Ranson was telling us there that Pep Guardiola does with Douglas Luiz, you wouldn't willingly let them leave. But what we're seeing happen now is that you sell him and then you insert this clause which says it's relative to the amount you pay normally. So say you sell him for 5 million, you'd insert a buyback clause of 15.5. We see this the whole time. So Real Madrid did it with Mariano Diaz this summer, where they sold him to Lyon. He scored goals at Lyon. They said, oh, hang on a minute, we made a mistake. Sorry, we'll have him back. They did it with Danny Carvajal, who they let go to Bayer Leverkusen. He was a revelation at fullback. They went, oh, another mistake, we'll have him back. Spare a thought for Chelsea, by the way, who seemed to forget that these clauses were an option. So when they sold Mohamed Salah, Romelu Lukaku, Kevin De Bruyne, realised they made a mistake, there was no oops option. City are playing this game now with Douglas Luiz, and it's a game that they're no strangers to because they played it already this summer. They let young defender Angelino go to PSV Eindhoven last season. He played every game for PSV, was very, very successful. They've now triggered that clause, 5.3 million only to bring him back. This is what they're doing with Luiz. They'll sell him for 15 mil. They'll insert a buyback clause, which I reckon, what do you say, 35 mil, roughly, in that kind of deal. So if he goes to Aston Villa and he's the best holding midfielder in the Premier League this year, they will just turn around and go, thanks very much for taking the risk for us. He's our player again. Here's 20 million as a thank you. Go on your way. Everybody wins. But this isn't just a convoluted kind of loan. In the next couple of years, there's going to be serious practical and, by the way, legal reason for doing this, because FIFA are looking at introducing new rules on loans from the 2021 season. Top division clubs, if these moves go through, will only be allowed to have 6 to 8 professional players, so that's anyone older than 17, out on loan at any given time. So Chelsea's loan army, as it's unaffectionately called, is no more. You can't do it. It's to stop people, as FIFA see it, seeking a commercial advantage. That's their phrase. You can't just buy every 15-year-old who looks like he might have an eye for goal, stockpile them, and then pick who you like. You've got to be more careful. There's always a loophole. There is always a loophole, and City have found it. What do you do? Oh, we can't loan him out. All right, we'll sell him, then we'll buy him back in a couple of years. No problem at all. Farcical.
This is Love Sport.
Right, it's the transfer rumour mill here on Love Sport Radio, and I've opened Twitter just to make sure that nothing's breaking in the transfer market that I'm missing, the lengths I go to for you, my beloved listeners. I've had a look at the trends just to see if, you know, Ronaldo to Arsenal has finally broken, but it's 9:49 on a Monday night. What is the nation doing in the summer? Well, if you're clever, like you lot are, you're listening to me right here on Love Sport Radio. You're listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill. But others are, of course, watching Love Island. The second trend on Twitter, hashtag Love Island. What's the top trend? What's the top trend? Hashtag Love Island 2? No, hashtag Love Socialism. That's presumably the extra version. That's the ITV3 version of Love Island, where everyone gets exactly the same amount of dates and they all have to wear the same bikini. Farcical. But I'm joined on the line by Harry DeCosimo, a football journalist, expert on all things Newcastle United. Harry, how do you go from being linked to Kylian Mbappe to being linked with Steve Bruce in the space of a fortnight?
That's Newcastle United for you in a nutshell. That's all I can really say about that one. Last time I was on this show, we were talking about Neymar and keeping Rafa Benitez and all that sort of thing. And it's got to this stage now where, I mean, I can't think of how this summer could have possibly gone worse for Newcastle United. And I've said a couple of times on Twitter that I'm unsure that there's ever been a worse summer in the Premier League's history from a club.
Come on. There's got to have been something worse, hasn't there?
Well, if you think about where Newcastle could have been and could have gone, and the fact that they've got no manager, barely any transfer targets, nothing with literally 2 or 3 weeks left of the window and till the window closes and the season left, I'm not sure that you can actually say, if you look into it deeply, that many people can match the disaster that's going on at Newcastle right now, because I can almost guarantee Newcastle will be relegated if the season started right now. And I think a lot of the North East press pack and the fans as well would agree with that.
But at least all the Geordies are staying optimistic. That's the main thing. You are going from Rafa Benitez to Steve Bruce, if rumours are to be believed. How does that make you feel?
To be honest, I can't believe that Steve Bruce is a target. I don't.
Well, he's not a target. He's the target, isn't he?
Well, yeah, the target, the only target, I guess. Yeah. I don't think you would see Steve Bruce's name on any other list for any other Premier League job, and I think that's a good barometer of where Newcastle are at. I think the Premier League has moved on from Steve Bruce, and to go from Steve Bruce anyway as a replacement for Steve McLaren, the same reaction would have got, but to go from Rafa Benitez to Steve Bruce just sort of rubs salt in the wounds even more.
very, very hard to take. And to make matters worse, it's not just a case that you've lost Rafa, because it's sounding like you're also losing his transfer targets. He's gone to China. He's joined Dalian Yifang. And we're now hearing that Salomon Rondon, who was your striker-elect, if you like, is now following him there. How much of a kick in the teeth is that?
At this point, not really much, because it was quite clear that Rafa and Rondon were linked. The only way that Rondon would have arrived anyway would have been if Rafa Benitez was staying and he'd got what he wanted on the, particularly on the transfer, the targets and the and what the players that would have been signed. That, you know, Mike Ashley doesn't want players that are older than 26. Rondon's 29, going on 30. So the only way that Rondon would have arrived would have been if Rafa Benitez had stayed, and that's been clear. That was clear for a good month that he wasn't going to stay. So by this point, nobody really expects Rondon to sign anyway. And I'm sure a lot of Newcastle fans are quite pleased to see him, if they care at all, linking back up with Rafa in China.
But is it not frustrating as a Newcastle fan? Because it seems so blindingly obvious that 16 million for a man who scores goals in the Premier League, even if he is 29, is a good piece of business. Was there any part of you that just hoped for a second that Mike Ashley might do the deal anyway?
Mike Ashley was never going to do this deal anyway, so there's no point in hoping. That's where you know, you're completely right. It is a deal that everybody would have loved to have seen done. But Newcastle fans know who they're dealing with at this point. And Mike Ashley was a man that was never going to do this deal. So hopes and dreams don't really live in Newcastle anymore because of Mike Ashley. And this is another example of why that is.
I'm actually, my producer has just burst into tears. I can hear the sound of a violin playing. This is awful stuff. But I'm going to cheer you up because it's not all doom and gloom. You did, it has to be said, lose Ayoze Perez for 30 million quid to Leicester City, which is not the dream. But if the Daily Telegraph is to be believed, you could be replacing him, and you could be replacing him in some style, because for the 483rd time this year, you're being linked with exciting young Brazilian signing. Striker. You were hoping I'd finish that sentence with woman, but striker, yeah. Joel Linton of Hoffenheim, he's not going to come cheap. Is he the man for the job?
Yes, I guess he's a good signing. I guess he would be an exciting signing, but again, I've said this countless times before as well. I believe Mike Ashley will spend money once a manager's through the door, but the type of signing, they'll be exciting on paper, and Newcastle fans might see a lot of decent signings come in the next couple of weeks, but I don't think that that'll help them in the long run, because the last time that happened in 2015 with Steve McLaren, £80 million was spent on Gini Wijnaldum, Florian Thauvin, Chancellor Memo, Alexander Mitrovic, all very exciting players on paper, and the club got relegated because the players didn't really fit in with
Harry,
the way that the
Harry,
club was.
Is this, that's a very good point, but is this just a case of you'll never love again? Has Rafa broken your heart and no one can fix it?
Not necessarily, to be honest. I just think Rafa is a crucial part of it. But in reality, this is Mike Ashley's Newcastle United. This is what Mike Ashley has done to the fan base. This is, you know, these things have all. Rafa Benitez was the reason why Newcastle fans had any hope at all, and the fact that he's gone. Not just the fact that he's gone, because if Rafa Benitez has been replaced with a man, you know, in May or in June, and it, you know, it'd been made clear that he wasn't staying, and there was replaced with a man who was going to be taking the club forward, an exciting appointment, like somebody like, I don't know, somebody like Patrick Vieira, that might have helped soften the blow. But the fact is that Newcastle are not just losing Rafa Benitez, but they're also replacing him with somebody who isn't the right man, and they don't have anything in place at all to grab onto to be positive with. So Rafa Benitez is a big part of it, but he's certainly not the be all and end all as to why Newcastle fans are so pessimistic right now.
Harry, it's a worrying time to be a Newcastle fan. If it's any consolation, if you do go down, I hear Barnsley is lovely this time of year. So there's always always a silver lining. Harry, lovely to speak to you as ever. Thanks for joining me. Harry DeCosimo there, football journalist, and it has to be said, bless him, rather pessimistic Newcastle fan at the moment. But who could blame him? It's not all doom and gloom, by the way, because even if they don't get Joel Linton, the thing that you forget when you're swept away in the excitement of the transfer rumour mill, and we've been talking about loans on this show, is that some clubs do actually have players on their books already. Dwight Gale wasn't at the club last year. He was on loan at West Brom in the deal that saw Salomon Rondon go the other way. He could come back. He's not world class. He's not going to win you the league, but he does score goals. And at this point, perhaps that's what they've got to take. Join me next time on the Transfer Rumour Mill.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.